Blog Talk Radio.
'64, beautiful song, flip side of I Get Around by the Beach Boys, number one hit.
Yeah, I grew up with those guys.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to welcome everybody to our Sunday show on Here Be Monsters with myself, Gwen Berry, and Jack Jodell from Saturday Afternoon Post. And today's guest is Dr. Jane. Are you on with us? Can you hear me?
I am. Good evening. How is everyone?
Hi, Dr. Jane. Very good.
We are worrying, baby. That's the message. That's got to be the message right now. There's just way too much fear out there.
Yeah.
Just way too much. So I think it's the best message we can send. How goes the campaign, Dr. Jane?
Well, thanks for asking. We've run into a little bit of trouble with the State Board of Elections. What happened was the requirement ballot is that you have to have all the paperwork, and part of the paperwork is collecting signatures from eligible and qualified voters from the district. And over the past several months, my campaign team and I have collected over 1,700 signatures. Only 1,000 eligible signatures are required. They recommend 1,500, but we went ahead and overshot that. We collected over 1,700. That was 88 legal-sized petition sheets. So over 1,700, and we submitted those on June 11th, so a little over a month ago, to the State Board of Elections here in Richmond. And the deadline was June 12th. The State Board only contacted me this past Thursday. That's July 12th. To say that their initial review of the petitions had only verified 834 valid signatures.
Oh.
And again, 1,000 are required. So they basically said, we're shutting you out. When we review your signatures, your 1,700 signatures plus, we only found 834. So we find their verdict rather unpersuasive, as we used a lot of...
They did this, Dr. Jane, to Butterworth, your neighbor there in West Virginia, and he took them to court, and they had to put him on.
Mm-hmm. That is what we will be doing. I've already talked with some Green Party members here. I'm going to go to the ACLU tomorrow because they deal with ballot access, and it just really illustrates the difficulty that outside the one-party system candidates face.
Right.
Just trying to...
They do everything they can to discourage smaller party candidates and third party candidates from entering races. It's unbelievable.
Yes, sir.
Well, no, they're not discouraging him, Jack. They're outright illegally.
Well, they're shutting him out. Yeah.
Illegally pressing him out of the room.
Right.
Without giving qualification. Now, if Dr. Jane has all his bona fides still, he just goes to a judge,
right.
and has the judge go back to the party. They have to put him on the ballot.
Right. And, you know, the resultant publicity, which will be inevitable, can only help. It'll, create some awareness of your name for those who may not be aware of it yet. And, so it could have a very good upside.
How's that going, Dr. Jane?
Well, thank you for having us on today. Really, and just goes to show the importance of independent media, because you can imagine I've contacted national press, I've contacted local media as well,
mm-hmm.
and there's nothing but silence as far as response goes. So not only are they trying to shut out the issues that we're trying to raise, the critiques that we're trying to raise, the case that we're trying to make for the public with the campaign, But they're really censoring even the knowledge for the public about what the State Board of Elections is doing, these institutional barriers that are constructed to shut people out.
Well, they're treating you like you're not even there.
Yeah, I mean, they've done this nationally to other candidates, too. I mean, Ron Paul comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, our campaign, because we're not mudslinging, because we're not doing the old politics, of hiring professional strategists, of raising millions of dollars, because we're not doing that, and because we're really showing the inadequacies of both parties over decades to serve the public, I think we are a threat. I think we are perceived as a threat by both parties.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't adequately explain, though, the reason why the local media has not taken up your story, from the paper publication to the online publications to the media, broadcast media, and the only explanation that could be for that is that they're bought and paid for, like other.
It's a pay-to-play game, unfortunately, and the public's usually the loser, unfortunately.
Right.
Absolutely.
Now, when we did the paperwork, I verified my campaign manager was with me as we handed over the paperwork, and I verified three times verbally, saying, what is the recourse that we have in case, for whatever reason, you all find that the ballots are inadequate or the petitions are inadequate. And they said there is none. There is no transparency to the counting process.
Oh.
There's no independent verification of the count, no independent audit. They don't tell you why the petitions would be disqualified. And so, I mean, you can imagine if someone doesn't have the means to hire legal help, right?
Right.
There's
like you just said, it's a pay-to-play game, and if you don't pay, you don't play. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to shut you out, and they're not banking on you suing. So I hope you catch them by complete surprise and give them a good spanking.
Well, the ballot won't be set for a few weeks, and we will be hopefully getting an injunction.
Right.
and going through all the proper legal channels. But as you said, we'll certainly do what we can, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, Dr. Jane, it's always good when you're running. I think that more candidates coming up in the next few elections who will be certainly coming from like positions as yours should remember to acquire for the campaign staff, not just media people and all the wonderful folks that will go stomping for you, but also a lawyer with some ability to work around, the Occupy, which I know you're a part of, the Occupy groups, were that's what they put into their basket, too, and it's still been pretty awful pushing, it's like pushing a transom through, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the National Lawyers Guild has been helpful. We do have a legal
Good. I think as far as the media, both national and local, goes, let's face it, not only are they bought out, but they're brainwashed, they're lazy, and they're brainwashed into this Democrat or Republican mode. And that's the only things they care to see, and that's the only things they do see. And they don't look for any other alternatives, and that's one of the reasons that politics has gone so stale and so predictable in this country. And, unfortunately, they make people like you be the victim.
Well, you know, I have heard, Jack, from friends who are part of the local roundup and paper publication, that there are folks in media, broadcast media, that get threatened with demotion, pay cuts, firing, if they pay attention to certain candidates or problems in a two-party system going down. I mean, Florida is a great place for that.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Well, you know, it's the same old thing. You got to do it their way, and it's my way or the highway with those people, and you just do it a certain acceptable way, and that's all there is to it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, and that's shortchanging the public terribly. It really, really is.
It is. It's undemocratic, and when you have these institutions like the Fourth Estate, like journalism, acting as gatekeepers, you know, these very corrupt gatekeepers to constrain, as you said, sir, the dialogue or the choices to just these two failed choices, these two, as you said, stale choices, who are basically offering the same kind of cereal. One is Kellogg, the other is Post, and they're both bad for you. And
They're different faces of the same exact coin, and we need a completely different coin, a completely different denomination to make things work properly in this country again.
Well, gentlemen, we actually have a call in, and maybe somebody has something to offer or a question. Dr. Jane, are you willing to talk with folks today about this?
Happy to. I'm honored. Thank you.
Okay, I've got a caller, the 352 area code. I've opened your mic. Hello, caller.
Hi, this is Anita calling in. I just wanted to let Dr. Jane know that Bruce Shuttleworth was in the congressional district right next to his District 8. So it was you're in District 7 in Virginia, is that correct?
That's correct, ma'am.
Yeah, District 8 was Shuttleworth, and Bruce Shuttleworth, and he was on the show with Gwen and I, actually, several maybe a month and a half ago. But in any case, the same exact thing happened to him, and he actually had to pursue the whole thing legally. It was very convenient for him because his wife is an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to get back on the ballot, but he was fighting the good fight, running as a Democrat against Jim Moran, a long-term incumbent.
Mm-hmm.
So I can honestly, as it stands, Jim Moran, you know, is the nominee. So in any case, I would say pursue it legally like Bruce Shuttleworth did, and he might be able to help you out or let you know who to talk to.
That's great advice.
Yeah. I'd like the audience to know that this is Anita Stewart, whom I did ask to call in today to do some commentary with us. She does our Wise Woman Media show that is Anita's on Friday evenings at 8 p.m. So, Anita, I just wanted to give you a little introduction there.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Yeah, we recently moved the show from Mondays to Fridays, so anybody can listen in on Friday, but it is about women over 40 creating change.
Mm-hmm.
So
great.
Those are the guests that I have on the show, and anybody can listen in and call in and comment. And I'm glad you're doing this, Dr. Jane, because more people need to step out and run for office, but that doesn't mean that it's an easy path to take.
And we'll take any kind of change that we can get at this point in time, because this this country has become so corrupt and so predictable and so downright boring. We need a change in a big way.
Yes, we do.
I sure believe that. But let me get off the phone for now, and I'll listen to the rest of the show. But I just wanted to throw that out there, and
great.
You know, I'm looking forward to hearing more about you, Dr. Jane, and I've already friended you on Facebook, so, you know, keep up the good fight, okay?
Well, thanks for calling in, Anita.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Bye, Anita.
Yeah, well, by golly, you got a little fan base going there, Dr. Jane. That's excellent. So we got to parlay that into some big votes in your district there and unseat that terrible Eric Cantor.
That's right.
Good Lord. Well, I tend to think you're going to be successful if you do, in fact, pursue this legally. And, you know, let's hope that I'm sure you're going to be successful, but it's just another roadblock they put in the way, hoping you'll waste all kinds of money that you don't really want to commit to something just to achieve that ballot status. You know, it's just, they make it so hard on non-traditional candidates. It's not the Democratic way at all. It's not Republican America, either any which way you look at it.
That's right.
Dr. Jane, can you re-inform our audience about your platform are you running as an independent or green? Just give us your platform and tell folks what you're running and the issues that you're most interested in addressing in your candidacy.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, I'm 31 years old. As you mentioned, I am affiliated with the local Occupy Richmond group. I am a physician. I graduated from the Medical College of Virginia several years ago. I help teach social justice, and that really informs a lot of why I'm running as an independent, and certainly informs the issues and policies that we are trying to raise that for decades have been ignored by both parties. So we're talking about economic justice, environmental justice, social justice, legal justice, but more importantly, we're talking about democracy, and what does democracy mean? It can't just simply be, you know, spending 2 minutes in an election booth every 2 or 4 years. How can the public get involved in policymaking at the local, state, and national level? Because I think, as we all know, politics is corrupt with outside money, with corporate money. And so what you've seen is a diminishment of the citizen, the disempowerment of workers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh,
increase
my, ever.
Of stress on families. And so A lot of the crises that our public faces need a broader sociological analysis that the Democrats and Republicans refuse to take and make.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's the value that we add, because unfortunately the Democrats and the Republicans haven't done anything to actually improve the economy or help people get back to work,
mm-hmm.
or improve the infrastructure or improve the education, or stop these imperialist, horribly costly wars.
Mm-hmm.
And those are some of the issues that my campaign brings to the fore, honestly, in a way that I think anyone can appeal to. So.
Well, that's a welcome change, and especially because, you know, your incumbent opponent, Eric Cantor, he's a waste of taxpayer dollars, to be very
frank.
He's a
weasel.
You know, all he does is grandstand and try and get attention. He doesn't do a damn thing for anybody's benefit.
It's not very smart, but here's the thing. Dr. Jane, I really wanted to ask you this question on this show because I think it would probably bring a lot of illumination out there with what you might have to say on the subject. What is your opinion of how do you support or how would you adjust or amend the Affordable Health Care Act that they call Obamacare? Where do you stand on that, sir?
Yeah, as a physician, too. That's
right.
Great question, Gwen.
That's a great question. I think the crisis in health care is systemic, and it's been going on for decades.
Yes.
I mean, if we look at the argument that was made, you know, in 2008, 2009, really, publicly about the need for healthcare reform, they basically identified three things. One was that America was spending more than twice as much per capita on health, right?
Mm-hmm.
On care. Two was that millions and millions and millions of people, 50 million people, didn't have access to healthcare,
mm-hmm.
right? And that 45,000 people were dying from lack of health insurance, right?
Right.
And then three, that the outcomes, so that the quality of the American healthcare system, the outcomes weren't justified by the enormous cost. So cost, quality, and access were
right.
really three reasons that, you know, policymakers were saying, we've got to do something. We're going to be spending too much of our GDP on healthcare, and yet millions and millions of people are dying unnecessarily or suffering from disability, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So unfortunately, what happened was a duplicitous game, unfortunately, by the Democratic Party, in which there was wide public support for what's called the public option or Medicare expansion or what's called single payer. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what the Democratic Party cleverly did was many of their policymakers pretended to support public option or Medicare for all or a single payer system of some type. And then the administration basically let Congress and then invited the for-profit insurance and for-profit pharmaceutical executives and lobbyists to write the bill.
Right.
And you can imagine what the outcome was.
Yeah, right. Well, we're stuck with the outcome.
1,000 Liz Fowler, Karen Ignani, you know, these profit industry people really influencing the outcome of the healthcare bill so that,
mm-hmm.
you know, drug costs are going to remain high. The profits will keep rolling.
Sure, right. There's no cost control. There's no cost containment whatsoever. Yeah, all it did was guarantee the insurance companies, the industry, a lot more patients. Yes, they have a little more risk, but they have a lot more patient base to deal from and to draw from, and costs will continually rise. Let's face it.
Yes, costs will continually rise. The insurance companies and drug companies will continue to reap hundreds of billions of dollars in profits that should be, rather, invested in improving the system,
right.
increasing access, increasing primary care providers. But I also said that it's a systemic crisis. So where are the provisions for public health, primary health, preventative health? You know, where's the provisions for nutrition, for health literacy? You know, health is more than just what you eat, more than your genes, you know, what kind of biological or physiological problems there are. And that's something that no politician has addressed or will address. And I think that's another aspect that I can bring to the table in terms
of my...
You're
talking about a more holistic approach to medicine. It's not just about the mechanical side of our physiology. You're talking about an awareness that brings a brighter attitude towards it and puts the emotional value of our mental health in the balance.
Correct.
Thank you.
Correct. Exactly.
Thank you.
Excellent. And, you know, we need more physicians like you coming forth to illuminate this topic for the general public. Instead, we got broadsided by a bunch of very, very far-fetched right-wing crap about socialized medicine and death panels and all this utter garbage that was conjured up. It's completely fictional, and it has nothing to do with the true situation whatsoever.
That's right. I mean, a lot of the public option or Medicare for All or single-payer proposals were supported by a lot of physicians, but still you had physicians groups resisting it because I think of the lucrative, incentives that modern medicine has created for so many hundreds of thousands of physicians and specialists.
Sure.
So I think physicians also are somewhat implicated in the problem of Obamacare because physicians unfortunately didn't say that health is a human right. You know, that was another huge omission on the part of the Obama administration.
Yeah, very true.
Thank
you,
Dr. Jane. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
And also, just to say that simply having health insurance doesn't equate to having good health.
No.
You know, I mean, simply, as you said, there's no caps on the premiums or deductibles or anything like that. On the insurance rise, you know, the insurance costs are going to rise exponentially, as you mentioned. The big problem was that you had this for-profit insurance model that has been left untouched or even has been emboldened.
Yeah, right.
And so not only was there an omission to declare health as a human right, there was also not a lot of activism on the part of physicians. So physicians also need to recognize that they have an obligation beyond the clinic, I think, to really advocate for their patients and their communities that they're serving.
Mm-hmm.
And
Dr. Jane, I don't know what your situation is there in your practice in Virginia, but I saw locally here, and I saw it in the media to a certain extent, especially when Mr. Oberman was on the air, that the nurses' unions and the nurses were actively campaigning against this, what has become the Affordable Health Care Act. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, right down to almost to the wire going, you know, we have to back up here. And nobody listened to them either.
Well, they wanted single payer like most of us wanted, you know.
Right. Well, they also wanted to look at what Dr. Jane is explaining is a systemic problem in the whole and I will not call it a healing industry, the symptom treatment industry in this
good
country.
Good point. I love that phrase. Very accurate.
Yeah. And so you're right. I mean, you had physicians like Howard Dean occasionally saying, you know, I hope they kill this bill. I hope that we actually expand Medicare. And that would have been a political win as well that could have perhaps saved the Democrats in 2010.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he folded.
Right? But instead they sold out to the for-profit industry.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think is important is that we recognize that physicians, too, have become deprofessionalized, that many of them have become technicians, you know, following protocols or guidelines or taking the art out of medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I think if they were to advocate for more of a holistic type of relationship and practice, they would have higher job satisfaction,
mm-hmm.
especially in primary care, if there were provisions in place to maybe take off some of the time demands on physicians, especially in primary care, who are just overwhelmed with the number of patients that they're required to see.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If the reimbursement was improved for physicians in primary care,
mm-hmm.
you would see, I think, better primary care, healthier Americans, lower costs,
sure.
people being more functional and happier, including
yep.
the physicians themselves.
Right. Well, years ago, we didn't have this debate, obviously, and things were a lot different before the insurance companies grew so powerful and so influential. They've always been out there, but in recent years, they've really become emboldened, and they've been just steering us down the wrong path altogether. And, you know, years ago, this is before you were even born, doctor, but Ronald Reagan, of all people, came out strongly against the adoption of Medicare in its early stages. He called it socialized medicine way back then.
Oh, sure.
Medicare today has been proven to deliver health care at a fraction of the cost of insurance company delivered health care, and it has done very, very nicely. Yes, no system is perfect, but it has done a far better job than the insurance company pharmaceutical collusion has provided for this country.
But I think we need to recognize why perhaps Reagan was attacking this very valuable service that really benefits the middle class and lower class far more than the elites, like the
right.
people who have lots and lots of money. I think we have to expand this. We have to connect the dots or see the bigger picture.
Sure.
And that is to say that it's really a microcosm for the larger attack on the public sphere. I mean, the attack on public sector workers, the
deunionization, right.
the attacks on Social Security, the attacks on public education.
Right. Good point.
Government of
you
our
know,
workers.
We've been at war, especially from conservative circles, and
yes.
mainly from the Republican Party and the Tea Party, against the federal government and all it does. They say it's completely wasteful. I'm sorry. The biggest waste of time in America is big, huge multinational corporations. They are not delivering their product efficiently or at the best cost or the best possible means for the American public. And no one will ever convince me otherwise because I've seen it with my own eyes. And as a result, they're constantly attacking federal programs, federal government, anything that the government does. They want everything to be privatized so there can be maximum profit for the big guys, for the elitists. And
that's right.
You know what? That just won't work.
Well, certainly that's true, Jack, but I would especially address this to Dr. Jane and his sensibilities as a healer,
right.
not as a doctor, as a healer.
Right.
This issue addresses really the complete lack of moral compass in the leadership of this country, which, as Jack pointed out, is primarily hooked into a corporate state.
Oh yeah.
And I think it's very brightly spotlighted in our health care quandary.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And actually, just the other day, I read a fantastic article. It's called The Great Transformation from the Welfare State to the Imperial Police State. And it's by a guy named James Petras or Petras, Petras, The Great Transformation. And he links them and imperialism and capitalism to all of these social problems that we're seeing. So as you mentioned, someone is benefiting, and it's this corporatocracy.
Right.
Yeah.
But the rest of us, the 99% or so of us, are being squeezed. It, you know, their profits and their benefits and all of their wealth that we actually produce comes at our expense. Mm-hmm. And I think Petras in this article wonderfully, wonderfully ties a lot of this stuff together, including stuff that the media never covers, and that is the police state, our imperialist wars all over, you know, in predominantly Muslim countries, whether it's in North Africa or the Middle East.
Well, underdeveloped countries, a lot of underdeveloped countries. We preyed on them, and then we'll war on them. It's just unbelievable.
But
all for the want of resources to profit.
Exactly. Yep.
And they accomplished that by finding the elites in those countries,
mm-hmm.
right? The comprador class.
Right.
And that comes out of a book by Michael Parenti called Against Empire from 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another fantastic book. I mean, a lot of these things have been predicted, and analyzed really well in a very accessible way. It's just that no one talks about them, and no one connects the dots. And it's
you know,
just,
that's a shame, because these people are very visionary and they're very accurate. I've read Michael Parenti's other book, A Democracy for the Few. It's an outstanding read. It is an outstanding read, and it's so true. It's just unbelievable how true it is and how he nails everything correctly. You know, but you're right. It's not on the bestseller list. It's been updated several times. He's getting old now, but he's been doing a great job with keeping it updated and current. And it's, you know, but your point is well taken, that a lot of this stuff is basically ignored or just falls to the wayside, and it should be the guiding light for most people, you know, as opposed to being an oddity, you know.
And then also, with, you know, in any policy making situation that is really puzzling for us, like, why would they attack unions? Why would they attack Social Security? You know, why would they attack Medicare?
Mm-hmm.
We should always look to who is profiting, who is benefiting, because
right.
it's, you know, we like to think we, you know, we grow
well,
up.
You got to follow the money. In all cases, you got to follow the money and what the money is trying to do. You know,
exactly.
Well, the thing is, though, Dr. Jane, that we're fighting against too, our population is lacking critical thinking skills. And I don't
right.
get why, because there's so many people, especially going into retirement, that are much better educated than, unfortunately, a lot of our younger people are today.
Oh,
and
yeah.
they were given the rudimentary skills to come up with this. They just, is it that folks are just too damn tired at the end of the day? And I think, too, a lot of it has to do with we have become, they say we're addicted to fossil fuel, and I say, you should pardon my French here, bullshit. We are addicted to fear. Fear
wow.
feeds the masses these days.
Yeah.
It really does. And
yeah.
we've got to get away from that. We have to allow that to slip out of our hands. We have to let it go.
Well, fear has been used by the cynical since time immemorial for the purpose
the
of securing power. And it's they're using it in an unprecedented scale nowadays.
Dr. Jane will tell you that fear is the primary element in our lives that creates disease with our body.
Good point.
So I think a lot of, you know, if we look at the statistics regarding psychotropic medication or antidepressant use or anti-anxiety medication
mm-hmm.
in the world, and which country is consuming most of it, America comprises 5% of the world's population, but it's estimated that more than half of the world's psychotropic and antidepressant and anti-anxiety medication and other types of psychiatric drugs are ingested by Americans.
Doesn't speak well of the way we live.
And David Williams will tell you, as an engineer who works with water systems in massive cities, he will tell you that our water can no longer filter out all of those drugs, so we're drinking them up in the filtered water systems.
And then imagine all the screen time that everyone is spending. You know, they say that over 30 hours a week is the amount of television that the average American watches.
And it's not quality television either. It's garbage.
Well, and so what purpose does all of this programming serve? I mean, why aren't people
pure entertainment? And it all it does is it diverts people from the real world. It lets them live in a world of fantasy and entertainment, and they don't have to grapple with reality that way. And you know what? A certain amount of that's fine, but a constant diet of it is like anything else. A constant diet of anything is bad.
But even more, sir, I mean, if we think about why aren't Americans in the streets in the numbers that, you know, really are worrying, given the stress that people are under,
right?
Why
yeah.
aren't Americans in the streets? And what role does the media and what it shows play in discouraging people from going out? You know, all of the video on loop that they play of police brutality,
mm-hmm.
of protesters being beaten up, of tear gas. of this authoritative state, this police state, that
makes people afraid to react.
Exactly, and then also, if you look at the kinds of movies which have been coming out, whether it's you know the Avengers or Iron Man or whatever it is, there's a very strong glorification of the military state or the police state
everywhere.
Yeah,
violence, and so I think fear is a powerful tool of politics parties to keep us in line, to keep us dissenting, to even stop us from asking questions why and who benefits and make a better world.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're not heading toward a better world the way things are going right now, and your point about the military doctor is very well taken. You can't go to even a pro baseball game anymore without being assaulted by pro-military stuff. You know, it isn't just the national anthem, which is fine. That's wonderful to have the national anthem. But, no, you've got to have tributes to soldiers, and they did this in Iraq and Iran, and all they mispronounce everything. And, it's constant glorification of all things military. And I'll tell you what, we are not the be-all and end-all of the people on the earth, and we've made a lot of mistakes with our military.
And it's only hurting us. I mean, I don't think the public realizes to what degree we are subjected to this very unhealthy...
They never think about it.
Yeah.
Because we're not critical thinkers. Today you have... Right on the air right now, you have three critical thinkers, but we are an extreme minority in this country.
Yeah, there was
I would ask you, Dr. Jane, have you ever considered the hundredth monkey effect? Do you know what I'm talking about?
You know, I saw a film starring Michael Rupert a couple years ago, and I think he invoked that story. At the very end there.
Yes, it's really about critical mass.
Right.
And you hear this theme, this critical mass theme from my community of new consciousness or new age or metaphysical, all the way over to the science fields of the new quantum science and whatnot, to put short little names to it all. But the point I'm trying to make is that it does bear fact when you look at history, that critical mass and achieving it. And I see great light when I see how many different friends I make and communicate with on a very personal and interactive level. I mean, relationships established through social networks in so many different countries where we all seem to, and I'm talking Iran and in Pakistan and all kinds of Middle Eastern countries and in Africa. I have friends over there that I've made who blog. Now, mind you, there's friends, but I will tell you, I think that with Occupy and the global effect of people raising up to say this is wrong in their governments and communities and sticking up for the moral side of the equation in humanity right now, all of us, us rebels,
mm-hmm.
are actually connecting with one another over this planetary consciousness, if you will, of the internet. And what is happening is I think that some kind of critical mass is brewing. I really do. That's why I am so supportive and stick with the Occupy groups and the Occupy energy that is out there anchored and won't die.
Right. It's not dying. That's right. Yeah, it's not. It's out of the main headlines, because the main headlines are very not only fictional, but they're also very fickle. But regardless, it's still out there. It's not going anywhere, and it's actually growing. And it's not reported, of course, but I mean, it is. It's a fact that people are turning away from the typical traditional you know, the Wall Street attitude and all that other stuff. Man, that stuff's
well,
so far gone now.
Well, I think what's happening is that people who do pay attention to social networks, and I will say that there is a little addictiveness in that, too, to a certain degree. However, what I mean to say is that people are getting, I see people getting more and more informed.
Mm-hmm. Right. And information is a good thing.
They read what's posted. I've seen people on Facebook who once thought that, you know, Obama could do no wrong type of thing. Just a broad example here, that the president was great no matter what he did type of thing, to seeing postings, reading them, and making the choice to check and see if there was validity to, pardon me, whatever they were reading, and then changing their minds. Information, education, illumination.
Right. Well, like they say to advertise the Science Channel nowadays, question everything. And it's true. You've got to question everything because we're being fed a record amount of complete BS. We really are. And it's in your best interest to question everything.
Yeah.
Always.
Absolutely. Even from some of our heroes. For example.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly,
yes.
Yeah.
Nobody.
You know, I mean,
analysis leads to a conclusion, and not always a good conclusion or the correct conclusion, but it'll lead you somewhere. And if you don't even take the time to analyze, you're robbing yourself of a great opportunity and of a way to pursue and achieve truth.
I hope so. And I sometimes wonder, you know, in an election year with people kind of corralled into the constraints of the election cycle and some of the false choices that are imposed on us by the media, how do we reach out and how do we expand our circles to include other people who are so plugged into this election extravaganza, as Paul Street says?
Well, communication is the key. And we can't do it on the mass media because that's, you know, they've deliberately closed their doors, slammed them shut. But you can do it in a many, 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 many other creative individual ways that, you know, Facebook is one, you know, basic emails another, blogs are another. I mean, there's all kinds of other options that are available. They're not as wide in scope, but they're very pervasive, and the more we do it, the better off people will be, the more debate will occur, and sooner or later, the more knowledge will occur, and from that will come good things.
Hmm.
Well, it's
a relentless activity we have to be involved in.
Yes, well, yes, absolutely, continuous.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite true.
You as a candidate for office, man, as I'm sure you do already, you've got to grab the opportunity to talk to everybody, to small groups, to big groups, to schools, to universities, to anybody and everybody who can possibly be converted to your line of thinking. And, you know, it will eventually, at some point or another, maybe not this election, but maybe the next election, will pay off for you handsomely.
I'm hoping that I think by sharing our understanding or my campaign's understanding of the design of the system, you know, showing people the bigger picture, because I think the picture and explanations and proposals that have been offered by the two parties are not only inadequate but and dishonest, but they leave people confused.
Right.
You know, it creates a public that's very reactionary rather than a public that's participating in the dialogue and the deliberation and the discussions and the debate, where people are engaged, as you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, we'll definitely try to reach out to schools and small groups and, you know, retirees and various groups and try to include as many people as we can to have that conversation. So it's not just us transmitting, you know, the authoritative or absolute understanding, but really having that exchange of ideas.
Yes,
well,
and, you know,
always...
I'm sure you do this too, Doctor. As you listen to people, you get a feeling for what they're looking for, and some things you can provide for them, other things you can learn from them to be able to provide for them.
Yes. they can certainly enlighten us as well. I mean, I've had so many conversations with conservatives who are really upset with Cantor as well, mm-hmm. and who aren't persuaded by the Democrat running either. And so
right.
we find a common ground just by listening, as you're
well,
saying.
Like the old adage, the enemy of my enemy is, or the enemy of my enemy is my friend. You know, and that's kind of what you're saying that they're looking out, they're looking for.
I
so
think
you
so.
Can be their friend.
Dr. Jane, can you give the listening audience and those folks that we love who listen to us in archive how they can find you online, all your contact, and what's going on right now with your campaign and anything that you're looking for help-wise?
Sure. Well, thank you for that opportunity. My website is, the Facebook page you can see is facebook.com/VivekJain, VivekJain, for Virginia, Forvirginia. And that leads to a lot of my links, a lot of information about the campaign, a lot of the positions, but a lot of information that people can share, can comment on, can send questions. People can contact me directly by email. I read everything myself, and I respond myself at Vivek4Virginia, that's VivekForVirginia, @gmail.com. And I think it's a pretty good start.
Great.
Wonderful. Please don't forget what Anita said about Bruce Shuttleworth. Bruce is a progressive, a true progressive. He's looking to be a Democrat the old-fashioned way. I like him. I think he's a man of good integrity. I don't agree with everything. He's a retired Navy pilot. But he is definitely against the war, the ongoing war of this country. He is extraordinarily aligned, the same as you are, about the Health Care Act and the health care system. And you two have a great deal in common.
You know, one of my fears is that a lot of progressives and people on the left will take the Supreme Court decision on Obamacare and once it starts actually being implemented, to not fight for actually sensible, efficient health care, universal coverage.
Well, good point, and I hope that isn't the case. My hope is that it'll be just one step up the ladder. We've reached that step. Now let's move up the next step and eventually get to a public option or to get to universal health care through a single-payer system.
Okay. I mean, that would be wonderful. I just don't know if by leaving the tools of destruction in the hands of the insurance companies, that is, mm-hmm. profits, and also the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, if they spent something like $540 million in 2009 lobbying to get the kind of bill that was finally passed,
mm-hmm.
you can imagine how many billions they'll be willing to spend in order to roll back any actual effort. And so what is the education effort? What is the outreach effort and grassroots effort that will be made that's necessary to win something like universal health care coverage or Medicare for All?
Well, they're pretty well entrenched. That's a good point. But,
yeah.
you know, nothing's impossible. When we look
Absolutely
at the civil
not.
Rights leaders of over a generation ago, look at what they accomplished against seemingly impossible odds.
Right.
I think we can be victorious in this quest as well.
It just that kind of faith, like Chris Hedges was talking about,
right?
And you stay the course, and for goodness sake, and I mean that sincerely, for goodness sake,
yeah.
allow yourself to release the fear, no matter what you're facing.
Right. Yeah,
don't,
right, exactly.
Don't face it with fear, Dr. Jain. I do apologize for mispronouncing your name. with the English. Jeez. We really thank you for coming and speaking with us tonight.
Good luck on your pending lawsuit and whatever course you choose to go. I'd love to see you unseat Eric Cantor. My God, I'd throw a party myself for that.
Wow. Well, the Richmond Crusade of Voters has invited me to participate in a debate or some kind of forum next month. I doubt Eric Cantor will show up. That's not really his thing.
It's beneath his dignity. He's got too big of a head to do that.
Jack, it's beneath his capability.
Very true.
Hopefully we will be able to and share some of these forums and events. And
right.
I really appreciate all the help.
And I will pass your name along to a couple of other of our Drumline radio shows so we get more words out there for you, Dr. Zhen. And thank you once again, especially for putting up with my rudeness there. I don't do that if I can help it. We are at the end of the hour, gentlemen.
Oh, my.
Thank you so much.
I thank you. And I
thank you, Dr. Jen, and keep up the good work.
Thank you for this chance.
You bet.
And Jack, thank you, as always.
Yeah.
I want to remind folks that you can read Jack's commentary at Saturday Afternoon Post. That's jackjodell53@wordpress.com. And please remember we're sponsored by Roundtree7.com and DaughtersOfISIS.com. Always get a plug in for your own company, right?
Yes, by all means. Well, we'll see you next week, everybody, or talk to you next week, everybody. Keep fighting, Dr. Jen, and we're going to get you victorious yet here, buddy.
Thank you, Jack. I'll certainly update you all.
Please do keep us in the loop. And but please feel free, too, to message me if you got some news and information. We'll have you back on. It's a pleasure.
Great.
All right.
Good.
Well,
very good, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And this has been Here Be Monsters, the Sunday show with Jack Jodell and Gwen Berry. And we'll see you next Sunday. Thank you all for tuning in, and I'm just going to play us out here with the same thing I played us in with.
Yeah, don't worry, baby. Enjoy life.
Don't worry, baby. I mean, come on. you all for listening. That's all we have for you this week. This has been the Sunday Show on Here Be Mine. I'm Gwen Berry. Thank you for listening, and daughtersofisis.com. It's-